China's type 94 Alpha SSBN, a subbrief. I'd like to start by thanking everyone that helps me put these together. These are really some outstanding individuals and groups of people that have come together to help support me and get the facts right using public sources only and bring this information to you in a coherent way. And I could not do this to the level that I do without Saturnax, H.I. Sutton, and the organizations like GlobalSecurity.org, Center for Strategic International Studies, International Institute for Strategic Studies, which are two completely different organizations, but they're both very good. And of course, my old favorite, the Federation of American Scientists, that have been helping us basically from the very first sub-brief. They got on early, and thank you very much to everybody, including the other websites like Military Today and Navy Recognition that contribute photographs and documentation. Thank you, everybody, for making this possible. All right, we're starting the story kind of in the beginning, or in the middle, rather, of China's nuclear power program. So just to give you a little backstory, is this is a second-generation ballistic missile nuclear-powered submarine. And so the first generation was called the Zha. That program began in the 50s and 60s. A little unclear as to when it actually began. They wanted to begin in the 50s, but they actually got developing on their SSBN in the 60s, rather. And this story is about the follow-on submarine of the Zha. So second generation SSBN, Russia came in and helped them design this one. The Rubin Design Bureau that had built the Yankee ballistic missile submarine and the Delta ballistic missile submarines for Russia helped Chinese engineers design this thing in the 80s. They continued on through the 90s, but China really wanted to take the reins as soon as they could and make this a new nuclear power plant design, different than the Zha, which that's very important. It needed to have higher power, last longer, so they didn't need to refuel it as often. Of course, have more reliability, because the Zha was very unreliable, to the point they didn't want it to go to sea. And they didn't put weapons on it, ever. So it wasn't really a ballistic missile submarine, I suppose, but in name it was. So they wanted to correct all those things by building this Type 94, include some automation that the Russians are very good at. And that process from the 80s to the 90s took about 15 years. And that brings us to 1994. 1994, development of the Jin ballistic missile submarine officially begins, according to Chinese sources and records. The design happens at the Wuhan Second Design Ship Design Institute of China Shipbuilding Industry Corporation. This is commonly called CSIC. The China Shipbuilding Industry Corporation owns many different design and development buildings and dry docks and shipyards all over China. So the one in Wuhan is the one that designed this. It was 10 years since they had designed the Zha. And in that 10 years, they had a lot of rotation. A lot of staff retired, moved out of the business for whatever reason. And so they had what we call in the engineering world brain drain, which is a silly term for something that's pretty devastating when it happens to your design bureau, is you lose all that senior experience and leadership. So a lot of the new young engineers are designing this Jin, and they're heavily dependent on the Russian advisors, if you will, to help them do this. A lot of new people are building this Jin. So they struggle to improve, especially like the power levels. This is a new design. It's different than the first generation Zha SSBN. And they struggle to get the power for this new reactor to be up to standards. And what they end up doing, really, is taking a lot of the old systems that are not power parent related from the Zha and just moving them into the Jin, which ends up being a huge mistake because the Zha, those systems were not reliable then, and they're not going to be reliable again in the Jin at first. A note about the Type 94. There are two variants. The original variant will be very similar to the Zha in terms of unreliability, low capability. The second version, which variant rather, that they make almost immediately is the 94 Alpha. We'll be talking about both, but I want you to know up front that there are two variants of the Type 94 ballistic missile submarine. So where are they built? We know where they're designed. It's in Wuhan. But they're actually assembled and built in this Hulado shipyard, also called Bohai. I think Bohai might be the older name for it. It's in the Hulado port up in the Yellow Sea. That's northern part of China, right on the coast, in the Liaoning province. Very, very close to, you know, the Korean Peninsula. Very shallow water, by the way. Out here, they have to go a long way to get out of the Yellow Sea into any kind of deep water. But the assembly building that you see there on the left-hand side, I have a zoomed-in picture courtesy of Mr. H.I. Sutton. This is where they assemble all their nuclear submarines. It's from the Type 92 all the way down to the Type 98. Today we're talking about the Type 94, one that's kind of in there in the middle. So they assemble the submarine in that large barn-like building, and they can assemble multiple submarines at once. There's several different assembly paths that lead out to the launch area, so they can do more than one at a time. And what we're going to do is we're going to show you this in detail. This is an incredibly important port and shipyard for China because of its capability to build these nuclear submarines more than one at a time, very similar to American capability. The submarine construction building, often called assembly building, is there on the left. It's the white building that's multi-stories high, 5-6 stories high. From there, after they assemble all the hull pieces and weld them together and put the systems inside, they will wheel it out into an area behind that building where they'll find a dry dock. And the dry dock can be flooded. It can be dry. They can launch them either way. If it's dry, of course, they'll eventually flood the dry dock and float the submarine, where they then will open up the gate, if you will. It's also called a caisson with a tugboat. They just pull it off. And I'll show that to you in detail in a second. And they can tug the gin that just was floated over to one of the pier where they begin pier testing. And there you can see close-ups of how that happens. They have a bridge crane to help move the submarine along these train tracks into the launch area, dry dock basin. And then they have these piers out in this little shallow area where you see all these other ships where they can continue to work on the submarine after it's been assembled. Here's another picture of what I'm talking about. The assembly building is outlined in yellow on the left. Very large building. You can see multiple train tracks that go towards the water. And you can see on the top, they're assembling what appears to be some sort of ship. And that ship will eventually be tugged or pulled into the launch basin that's there at the top of the picture. For what we're talking about today, it appears that they've just recently assembled one submarine that is sitting in the dry dock that has been flooded, and that submarine is floated now. So you can see the path it takes from the assembly building down these railroad tracks, if you will, into down a slope into this basin. And like I said, this basin can be dry when they do this. It can also be wet. It's up to them on how they want to launch it. But once it's in that basin, they do eventually flood it with water. And this can happen over the course of a couple days. This isn't exactly, you know, this doesn't happen quick. It can, but typically it doesn't. Everything they do here is very calculated and methodical because they don't want to damage the submarine just getting it into the water. It's a very hazardous operation, and it's something you do carefully. So here at this arrow where I've got my cursor now, you can see that there's a door there, what looks like a door. And whenever there's water on both sides of that door, it's very easy to move. So they just put a tugboat to that and they can swing it out, completely detach it and move it off to the side so it's completely out of the way. And at that time, that's when they'll come in with the tugboats and begin tugging, literally pulling that submarine out of the little flooded dry dock area and over to one of the piers on the right hand side. And that happens on launch day. And again, launch day can, this whole process can take more than one day, but that's the launching process. And that's the difference between keel laying, which happens in the assembly building. Years later, when it's assembled, it gets launched, which is what I just described to you. And then once it's pier side and it's finished all of its pier side test, which can take months and sometimes years, it will then be commissioned into service at that pier. And that's kind of the process from commission to launch, correction, keel laying, launch to commission. So let's talk about the Type 094 by the numbers. Displacement-wise, these are very similar submarines, so we're just going to combine the 94 and the Alpha variant into one description here. They displaces about 11,000 tons submerged. That's with its armament installed. It's about 450 feet long, so it is a long submarine, but it needs to be because it's a ballistic missile submarine. And it's 40 feet a beam, which is in line with the dimensions of, say, a Delta, like a Delta II maybe. So it's basically a Chinese variant of one of the Deltas, you know, if you can think of it that way. It does have two reactors, just like the Deltas, that provide 3,000 shaft horsepower to a single shaft. And that's where it's a little bit different than some of the old Soviet boats. A lot of the older Soviet boats like to have two shafts. But here we only have one, but we still have two reactors. And they're very noisy reactors. They really did not improve hardly any of the sound silencing significantly from the Zha. It is a seven-bladed screw. They did get that right. Thank you, Russia. And but it does 20 knots on the surface, 25 knots submerged, and that's, I think, rounding up a little bit. I don't know if they'd be able to maintain that speed, but they can reach that speed. So the test depth is about 1,300 feet for this ballistic missile submarine. Its quietest lineup, the quietest we've ever recorded this thing, according to public records, of course, is 120 decibels, which is not quiet at all. That's in its patrol quiet lineup. It's still radiating like a rock and roll concert. It's just not good, sadly, for the Chinese. But it does shoot 12 of the JL-2 SLBM, submarine launched ballistic missiles. The A variant upgraded that to the JL-2C, also incorrectly, in my opinion, called the JL-3. Some public sources call the JL-2C JL-3. I believe those are wrong. Just know that they're talking about the same missile if they do that. It does have six torpedo tubes. They're all 53 centimeters, so no big long-range torpedoes, just regular tactical torpedoes. They are capable shooting of the Fish 3 torpedo, also known as the YU-3 torpedo. This is the same torpedo that they designed for the Han, which was first generation fast attack. Not a very capable torpedo at all, but it doesn't need to be. The mission of this boat is to take 12 missiles out into the China Seas and submerge them, hide them from satellites and so forth. So they're not too worried about tactical torpedoes. It can shoot the Set 65E, though, which that's a Chinese version of a Russian torpedo. Know that the U-3 is just one of many different variant torpedoes. There's a U-4, 5, and 6 that are each more advanced, but we know that the Jin does shoot the U-3. She can stay at sea for about 90 days, which is comparable to just about any other ballistic missile submarine in any navy, and has a 100-person crew, which is, again, typical. So where do they base these out of? Well, a major base in China, and it's the largest in Asia, the largest submarine base. Let me caveat that. The largest submarine base in Asia is in Yulin, also known as Sanya. And it's ironically a resort island. So you could get a hotel room across the bay from the submarine base, walk out on your balcony with your coffee in the morning, and watch naval operations happen across the way. There's a few interesting Instagram accounts out there that have taken photos of the little cave that they take submarines into. There's an underground bunker, if you will, something straight out of a James Bond movie, that you can see from the hotel. Yeah, across the bay. But getting back to the base, they have 16 submarine berths and 4 maintenance piers. So, and you can put multiple submarines on a maintenance pier. So this is a very large base. They also have an underground submarine pen that we're not sure exactly how big it is, but we've seen the Jin, the large ballistic missile submarine, being tugged in and out of the submarine pen. So we know it's at least big enough to hold one ballistic missile submarine at a time. It is possible that in this underground pin is where they conduct the missile loading. So they do that out of the sight of satellites. So no one really knows how many weapons are on the Jin. And like I told you, the Zha went to sea rarely. And when it did, they didn't dare put a nuclear weapon on it because they didn't know if it was going to come back, which is something that not too many people know. Okay, the Type 94 hulls 1 and 2 and Type 94 Alpha hulls 3 and 4 are all based out of Yulin. So the first 4 of the 8 that they're going to build are based out of this southern submarine base. This is in southern China. So here's some expanded photos of what I'm talking about. At the top of the base, because it's on this peninsula where you see that shoreline right there, they have these underground tunnels going to an underground facility. And this is where they can train in nuclear weapons and rocket bodies, and they store them all underground, which is a great place to put them in case something terrible happens. It's contained. Down at the bottom, you can see one of the new Gen-class SSBNs sitting along one of the piers right there. And on the right-hand side, you have the cave entrance. The Federation of American Scientists have blown that up for you so you can see a little bit better as to what it's like. It's literally looks like a train tunnel, but it has water going into it instead of train tracks. Yeah. And notice the demagnetization facility over there on the right-hand side where they can demagnetize these boats, which is a pain in the butt to do. I can describe it for you. Basically, days before you go into this facility on the surface, of course, you just get tugboat over there. You don't even drive over there. They push you over there. But because you're demagnetizing the entire submarine, you have to take all magnetic media off the submarine. And back in the 80s and 90s, you know, we didn't have that many hard drives and stuff, which we had to take those off too, because those were magnetic back then. They weren't like the SSDs we have today. We had to take all this stuff off the boat, and it took days to do. And a lot of it was secret, which meant two-person control on every little thing, whether it was a floppy disk or a huge hard drive that weighed 50 pounds. You know, you had to have two-person control the entire time. And talk about a logistic nightmare. The entire weapons department, pretty much the entire crew, had to get together, organize how they were going to take all this information, hard drives and magnetic media, tape drives, reel to reels we had back then, everything. It was a mess. And put it somewhere safe and then secure that location for the day that it took to go into the demag facility and then come back out again. Yeah, crazy operation. Really sucks when you have to do it. But whenever you come out, you don't, it kind of resets your hull, you know, signature down to zero, which is great because that's what you want, because the longer you go underway, the more you drive around the globe, that signature becomes louder and louder on the magnetic spectrum, which is something that maritime airplanes use to find submarines. So very important facility there on the right. All right, the other submarine base is up north in the Yellow Sea. And it's the Yangzhong, or also known as Loshan, submarine base. Again, two names. On the Yellow Sea, it's a very shallow water, so whenever the Jin ballistic missile submarines transit out of this, they have to go a very long way to find deep water. A lot of times, they won't bother. They'll just go out into the Yellow Sea, submerge, and just stay right there, because it's very hard for any other navy to get into the Yellow Sea, other than, like, say, South Korea. And South Korea doesn't have a lot of ASW capability. They are getting better, by the way, but yeah. And this is where hulls 5 through 8 are. And again, 8's not built yet at the time of this recording. We're going to get into that, but this is where they keep them up north. It's in this Loshan submarine base. There's the coordinates for you. If you want to look it up on Google Earth, you may see something interesting if they've updated it since then. They also have an underground submarine pen up here. It's a very common trait, it seems, with these submarine bases. It's also a very smart way to protect nuclear weapons in case there's an incident where one gets dropped or something. And if there's any kind of casualty, it's at least contained, you know, inside this underground bunker. So, and on the right hand side, you can see kind of the perimeter wall around the base there. I think they've done a great job. This is from Federation of American Scientists, by the way, of labeling everything. They're very meticulous, the people over there. So thank you for this. All right, so let's talk about what they launch. The JL-2C is the improved version of the JL-2. Remember, the first two gens shoot the JL-2. Hulls 3 through 8 will launch JL-2C, which is also called Giant Wave. That's what the name in Chinese means. The American or NATO designation is the CSSN-5 Sabo. It's a naval variant of the DF-31, which is a land-launched, truck-launched Chinese ballistic missile. Has a range of about 5,000 miles. Can carry, you know, a single warhead anywhere between 250 kilotons to 1 megaton. So variable yields on these warheads. Or And more commonly, it'll carry multiple reentry vehicles, three maximum, each with 90 kilotons. Those are like little city killers is what they refer to them as. And so each one of these missiles could potentially take out three cities within 5,000 miles. Very deadly missile. The missile, ironically, more capable than the submarine. All right, let's talk about the U-3 Fish torpedo. And remember, there's a YU-1 all the way up to a YU-6. But we know that they shoot the YU-3. So we'll talk about this one specifically. Its service began in 1984. It is the first indigenous to China, large scale, in other words, they mass produce these, sound-guided deep water torpedoes. So they have a lot of new capabilities with the YU-3 that the previous versions didn't have. They did originally make this for the Han, which is the fast attack first generation submarine China has. We have a sub-brief on that as well. It is a 53 centimeter diameter torpedo. It's 7.8 meters long. It is battery powered, so it is not combustion like the Mark 48 is, for example, or the Spearfish. This has a battery in it. And it's passively guided, which is one of the major upgrades that they had. This thing goes out to a specific range where it is told before it's launched to turn on its sonar, and it just listens to whatever is the loudest noise. It points the nose of the torpedo so the loudest noise is right in front of it, and that noise can be anything. It could be a trawler, it could be a submarine, it could be a warship. Yeah, whatever. It has very little target discrimination, which makes this weapon terrifying, kind of, because if you're making more noise than your target, you could potentially become the target. And like I said, these things are not exactly quiet submarines. So the YU-3 Bravo is an improvement on this YU-3 torpedo. And what they did with the Bravo version is they added active sonar. So it can actually ping out a high frequency ping. It's above human hearing, so if you were a diver in the water, you would never even hear it because the energy level, the frequency is too high for your human ear. But sonar systems can hear it, and that's how it works. It's a high-resolution, short-range, active homing to help, you know, lock onto a target, essentially. But in order to do that and make it work, they had to reduce the top speed down to 35 knots, and that's really a problem because a lot of modern ships and attack submarines can do close to 35 knots. So if they have just a little bit of a head start, couple thousand yards, they can probably outrun this torpedo until it runs out of battery power. And something about battery powered torpedoes in general is that they will kind of slow down as that battery gets below 50% power, just a little bit. They'll kind of ramp down on you, and then they cut off all of a sudden whenever the battery isn't strong enough to turn the motor anymore. Another upgrade to this was the YU-3C, where they increased that speed back up to 40 knots. The range is only 15 kilometers, though, which is relatively short range. So it's got to get close to you to hit you with one of these things. It does have a 205 kilo warhead, which is about 450 pounds. That's reasonable for a heavyweight torpedo. I think it would call it a heavyweight. The torpedo must slow down near a target to lock onto it. So it's going to run at you for 40 knots. And then just to make sure it hits you, it'll probably go down to 35 or whatever it needs to get down to make sure that it gets close enough for a detonation. In 1992, we found one of their torpedoes and realized when we took it apart that they were using a Mark 48 guidance circuitry in it. And that blew our mind because how did they get that, right? So China either got the design over some kind of network or through espionage. We don't know. But they're using, as of 1992, we know that the Mark 48, this is not the ADCAP, by the way. This is the old school 1980s Mark 48 guidance system was found on a YU-3C that I suppose we had acquired from them and found that they had acquired it from us. And that's the way it works. All right, let's talk about these hulls that they built. So I told you the first two hulls are the older ones. They're, you know, the Type 94s. They shoot the older missiles, the JL-2s. Not the 2Cs, the old JL-2s. The first hull was laid in 1999, commissioned in 2007. So it took 8 years to build. And they build these two at a time. So the other one was 2002 to 2009. And there you can see pictures of them. They're down in the Yulin Island base. And their common operating areas there are either right off the coast in the South China Sea, or they could go over to the Philippine Sea. They often go to the Philippine Sea because that puts them within strike distance of cities like Seattle and west coast of the United States. So you could see them over there. But they knew that they had to make improvements. They knew that the Jin was not significantly better than the Zha. It certainly wasn't more reliable. And so they had to change a few things. So one of the first things they did was improve the missile itself. Because while all this is going on with the submarine, you have an entire division of people separate from the submarine division working on improving missiles. And they're like, hey, we've got a better JL-2C now. It's got, you know, it can carry more, it can shoot a lot farther, but it's a little bit taller. So you're going to have to adjust your submarine design so it fits in the submarine now. So they do that. They change the missile deck a little bit. It's a little bit taller now. They also make it a little more round, a little more smooth. So it's more hydrodynamic. It doesn't vibrate as much whenever it's moving through the water. It also doesn't slow the submarine down with hydrodynamic drag as much. They also removed the sail windows in the forward part of the sail, and that's very much a Russian feature on a lot of Russian boats because they have very cold water ports. And so in really bad weather, you would keep the crew down inside the sail looking out these windows. The problem with those windows is that they make noise. They are removable, but even after you remove them, you have a bunch of holes in your sail that can whistle as water flows through them, just like you whistle when you blow air through a whistle. It has that same effect when water goes through these windows. They just got rid of all that. They're like, we don't need those. We're going to use a sail at the top, just like everybody else. So the enlarged missile bay was one. They removed the sails. They maintained the same number of missile tubes as the Type 94. I need to stress this point because there is a lot of misinformation out there that I don't should get tricked by, where people think that they changed the number of missile tubes. They did not. They simply made the missile tube a little bit taller, but they kept the same number. It's 12, a dozen, very easy to remember. They also have a retractable towed array there on the back. All right, so this new and improved Type 94 Alpha SSBN begins with Hull 3, laid down in 2003, commissioned in 2011. Again, they're building these two at a time. So 2003, 2004, that's Hull 3 and 4, commissioned 2011, 2012. These two are going to go down to the Yulin Naval Base as well in the South China Sea. So the first four hulls total, South China Sea based. Here's a great chart that I found for you. It gives you an idea of how loud these submarines are compared to other submarines. So at the very noisy part of the list is the Zha SSBN, where they literally didn't sound silence anything. When they start that thing up, you can hear it from space. It's extremely loud. It's actually louder than the Han, which is hard to beat. Really hard to beat. So the Han and the Zha, loudest submarines, loudest nuclear submarines ever created in the history of naval warfare, period. Second is the Shang and the Jin. So China just has a bad record of not being able to make quiet boats. And this is before the crew gets on them and starts banging doors and stuff. And they're all noisier than even the 1970s Victor III, 1980s Victor III. So they never even achieved Cold War level sound silencing. I will say this, in 2021, they've improved a lot. And they're still building these Jins. So each one that they build is a little more quiet. I must give them that credit. They are making improvements. But on a scale of Cold War nations, they're still behind what Russia was in the 1970s. So a little bit quieter than them is the Victor, the Akula, the Oscar, the Akula II, improved Akula, as we would expect. And then the more modern Severninsk, for example, one of the quietest submarines, also known as the Yasin, quietest submarines in the world right now. So that's the scale for you, just to give you an idea. These boats are easy to find. They're still deadly as hell. They carry 12 missiles that will destroy up to three cities apiece. Within 5,000 miles. And that's no joke. That is a very real capability. So just because they're noisy doesn't make them useless. They do go to sea with missiles, unlike the Zha. All right, let's move on to hulls 5 and 6. Again, these are all being built in the same shipyard that we had talked about earlier. But with hull 5 and 6 being commissioned in 2018 and 2020, which these are being based out of the northern sub-base, the North Fleet, China's North Fleet, at the Loshan submarine base. That's the one on the Yellow Sea. And oftentimes, whenever these are deployed, they may just stay in the Yellow Sea. They won't even try to venture out into the Philippine Sea. A large part of that is they have to go by Japan and South Korea to do it in shallow water. And it's really hard to sneak around those two countries. I'm not saying that they won't try, but a lot of times they'll just go to the Yellow Sea and submerge for months and then come back into port because it's easy. And if something happens, they can go help them real fast. You know, they can come to the surface, get towed back to port, and it's not a 100-mile journey. So a lot of times these guys will not go very far. And with them is Hull 7 and 8, again, stationed out of the Northern Fleet. But Hull 421 was just commissioned in 2021. So this is a relatively new boat. Don't know a lot about it. We assume that she's a lot quieter, but she does carry the same missile as the earlier versions, the JL-2C with the 5,000-mile range, three warheads and whatnot. And she's going to be based out of that northern port as well. And at the time of this recording, there is one more under construction. And this surprised a lot of us. We didn't. They had announced that they were going to build five of these gens back in, what, the 90s or early 2000s. They end up building eight. And through bad luck and maybe some laziness, we didn't know about 7 and 8 until relatively recently. So they're continuing to build these. And who knows if they're going to stop. Maybe they build hulls 9 and 10. We don't know. But we know that hull 8 right now is under construction in the Hulu Dao shipyard, right? It's been assembled and it's in the basin and it's going through pier side testing. We expect her to be commissioned next year in 2022. We don't know if that's going to happen. Sometimes these pier side tests, if they don't go well, it could be a couple years before she's commissioned. But if everything goes well, from launch to commission is typically a year, maybe a year and a couple months. And that is the eight Type 094 SSBNs that China operates. 12 missile tubes apiece, three warheads maximum per missile, 5,000 mile range, city killers. All right, so my final thoughts on this, you probably get my impression just by describing these to you that this is a less than capable submarine. And you'd be right. Just to be honest with you, it's not great. But what I will say in doing the research for this is one of the most secretive development projects I've tried to find information on. There is so much misinformation on this topic on the internet. It's mind-boggling. And it made me really question a lot of my sources. I really had to buckle down and go to sources that I trust, like CSIS, H.I. Sutton, of course, Saturnax, people that I know what they're talking about. Because when you go to sources that are less than reliable, like journalist sites, even they get it wrong. And I believe some of it may be intentional. There may be some intentionally disinformation out there on the internet about the capability of these Chinese submarines. One, to make them sound better than they are, and in some cases to make them sound worse, so it's not as much of a threat. And the truth is somewhere in between those things. And that's what took most of my time in writing this. Very few public announcements. As far as open source intelligence goes, I just went to the ones that I knew I could count on, like globalsecurity.org. So a lot of credit to all those guys. This is a second strike threat. That is credible. In other words, if any country were to strike China with a nuclear attack and decimate it, any one of these submarines that are deployed, no matter if it's in the Pacific or if it's in the South China Sea, they could retaliate. So and that's really their purpose, is to make sure that no one conducts a first strike on China. It is a very noisy submarine and quite honestly, not a much of an improvement over the Zhao. The Type 94 Alpha is more of an improvement, but the original Type 94, really not much better. And that was with Russian help too. Maybe they should get a refund. All right. Well, hey, that's it for the Type 94 Alpha. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I have to say thank you very much to our ever-growing community here. We always acknowledge the top two tiers at the end of every subbrief. So I do want to say thank you to William R. Collier Jr., Harpoon Henry, Adam Morgan, Kelly Martin. Thank you for being department heads. I had one comment on YouTube about department heads. He's like, why do you ask for $100 a month? He's like, that seems excessive. And I agree with him. And I, the truth is, I didn't ask. We never had a $100 a month category until people started donating $100 a month on their own. The very first one, I believe his name was JB, who has since retired and can no longer support $100 a month, which, you know, good on him for retiring. I'm very happy for that. So we did not create these categories expecting anyone to donate this much money a month. What happened was the generosity and support of people came first. And I was like, well, I have to give them a name. I have to credit. I have to give them some credit. And so that's how the department head came about. For the longest time, we just had division officers, because from day one, the very first subbrief, we had Scott Borg and Sean O'Neill down there. Those were the first two division officers ever. And they've been with us every month for over 3 years now. So thank you, of course, to Scott Borg and Sean O'Neill. Also, Brendan Ferry, DJS4000, Jordan Vazraka, Jeremy Edwards, Noel Rodriguez, and we have a couple new names. We have Alexander Huff, Chappie James, Nathan Wilbanks, Robbie Stahl, Joel Cornett, Jason Wang, and Josh Warnick. Thank you guys for being division officers. And honestly, everybody else that supports the Subbrief Project, you really warm my heart. I owe you guys so much. Because during the pandemic, the year of 2020, you guys paid my rent. I didn't have any other income other than my Navy retirement, which is pennies. You guys got me through the pandemic. So thank you so much. And I'll continue to do this as long as you guys continue to support me. If we have one member, it doesn't matter. We'll do a Subbrief, okay? All right. I look forward to seeing you guys next month. You will get a podcast in a couple weeks. And from there, I'm going to talk a little bit about the future. 2022 is going to bring some changes in a good way to this channel. And I look forward to talking to you guys about that. Have a great month, everybody.